And welcome to the program. I'm creating resilient kids because education is broken. These are the words of my guest, Ashley Costello. Now, she's worked in the field of psychotherapy for over 20 years. It was a TED talk last year that brought Ashley to my attention. Education and children were a big part of my life for a few years. You see, my son went to a Steiner school and I became very involved. I became a trustee and I was chair of that school for a few years. I got to see the insides of education from both sides of the plate. Steiner education, with all of its faults, is a model of how education could be. And then when my son left and went into mainstream education, I could see the gap between the two worlds and felt the pain of both. Hearing Ashley in her TED talk spoke to my desire for change. So on this program, you'll hear how Ashley's initial interest in psychotherapy stemmed from her A-level studies. It was the possibility of helping people that called out to her. So during her gap year, she went travelling in South America, and we're talking serious travel here. These are the days before mobile phones and satellite navigation. But it was the synchronicity of a missed phone call from a university that set her life on a path. The call, although she missed it, led to a course on counselling and eventually into a passion that became psychotherapy. She was one of the youngest people in her training and subsequently in practice. She puts her ability to excel in the field of therapy while so young down to her travel experience. Today, Ashley is about supporting children in education. She specialises in children and adolescent mental health issues. As I said, I discovered Ashley when her TED talk, Education is Broken, came up on my Facebook feed. She received so much feedback from that event that it encouraged her to start a new project, The Resilient Kid. It is a program that looks to fill the gap for parents, teachers and heads, and everyone who feels passionate about giving children the best tools for a positive future. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Ashley Costello. My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. I am delighted today to have Ashley Costello with me today, and she's a psychotherapist who specializes in resilience. One that might say there's a lot of need for resilience in the world at the moment, or with all the things going on. But I'm sure we will hear more about how resilience is relevant to Ashley. So thank you for taking the time to be with us, Ashley. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Paul. Really pleased to be here. Really excited.
Yeah, it is good. It's good. I love to have these conversations. It was a random conversation that led to us through a mutual friend, Gina Cox, who was doing some work with you. And I saw that conversation and reached out to you, and Gina had also mentioned me as well, which I thought was really interesting how this thing sort of came together. So we had to speak today. So Ashley, you know, this program is about life, passion and business. And I understand you're really passionate, particularly about the work you do. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you've got to that passion and what it is you do and how you express it in the world?
Yes, certainly. Thank you. Yes, I think it's very, we'll put it down to synchronicity that we spoke today. Gina's an old friend of mine. So I trained as, I went to university, first in the family to do that. Went to university, studied psychology at a time when it wasn't as well known as it is now. And probably at the time I took my psychology A-level, I didn't really know what it was about. I just knew it was about people. And that's kind of where my passion lay. So did the usual university track, did lots of different corporate jobs using those skills, and then decided to train as a therapist and study counselling. And I loved it, absolutely loved it at the time. I was the youngest on the course, was allowed to join the course because they had originally, the university had phoned and said, actually, Ashley's too young to be accepted onto a counselling course. You know, we feel like she needs a bit more life experience. And the answer came, well, she's in the middle of South America, travelling around Chile. So how much more life experience do you need her to have? And just very luckily, an auntie who was a real advocate for, you know, pushing young people answered the phone that day to the university professor. So I was very lucky to get on the course.
Is that where you actually were? Were you actually exploring Chile at the time?
Yes, I was. Yeah, yeah. I was travelling. I'd left university and decided I was going to spend the summer in Chile and Peru. Backpacking, and it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And
so I'm not sure how old you are, so I won't ask that question, but that, I mean, modern backpacking means a mobile phone and a sat nav. Backpacking when I was younger, I'm 56, when people went off backpacking, they literally disappeared for months at a time and no one knew where they were.
Yeah, so that kind of backpacking I'm talking about, Paul. Okay,
so it's before mobile phones we're talking about here.
Oh yeah, for sure. I didn't have a mobile phone at the time. And what was really, well, I think it's really funny, probably wasn't very funny for my parents. No. I'd gone to the middle of, I think it was like the Atacama Desert, and we'd done some camping there. And then I traveled to the nearest place that had a phone, because I'd obviously said to my mom, you know, I'll ring you when I can. But, you know, like you've said, there wasn't mobile phones. There wasn't, you know, you couldn't just pick up a phone and call home. And I rang and I said to her, "Hi, Mum, it's me." And she's like, "Oh, how are you?" And I said, "Oh, guess what? We've just had an earthquake." And with that, the phone line went dead. So you can imagine that's the kind of, you know, as a parent, that must be terrifying. For me, it was hilarious because I was like, oh, you know, because you don't think, do you, at that age? So yeah, so I, to get back to the story, gone to counselling, really, really loved it, and began to develop my therapy side. And I used to get a lot of comments, "Oh, you're very young to be doing this," and then they would come up with an issue and then be like, "Wow, how do you know about that?" But just because of the kind of life experience that I'd had, and because I had been quite open with, you know, traveling and learning and things like that. And then I would say about 12 years ago, traveled to the Middle East.
Yeah.
And over there in Abu Dhabi, particularly where I was, you couldn't open a school without a psychotherapist on staff. Like, you can't have a license to open your doors. So there's lots of things. I mean, Abu Dhabi is a very new country. It's only, you know, 65, 70 years old. You know, that amount of time, 65, 70 years ago, they were still living in tents in the desert in a very tribal manner. So the Brits and the Americans had gone over and helped with the infrastructure, you know, everything. They'd helped with everything, which is brilliant, which is why as Brits we are welcomed over there. So I'd gone over to do some work there and was in a very large international school, and there was 1800 students and 200 staff, and me as their therapist, as their point of, you know, whether it was crisis, whether it was ongoing issues. So I literally needed a revolving door, but absolutely loved it. Did research there, had research published. And it was just, it was one of those things that all the stuff that I'd done before, all the issues the clients had had were amazing and gave me great experience. But this was every single day, every hour of the day, and it cut your teeth. You cut, you know, the experience.
But a place that size is a community in its own right, in a way. 1800 students is a community.
Oh yeah.
And you're going to see every single, it's going to be a reflection of the community they live in. So every single facet that's going on in the world will actually be represented in that 1800 people.
Oh, totally. And I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. I don't think it's a job that you can do forever, because it is very, you know, you're worn out with it. You would get burnout really, really quickly, I'd say. But going back to your point, for sure, because we would have, I think we had something along the lines of 85 different nationalities in the school. We had a lot of locals, Arab children and staff, which was, you know, amazing, and amazing to be immersed in their culture. And then we had, you know, children from all over the world whose parents had come to Abu Dhabi to work, or they'd come to study, and so that it was brilliant. And like you say, it brought up so many different issues, whether it was a staff member that had never left home before and was suddenly, you know, a single teacher in a foreign country, or whether it was, even though that is a very rich country and very wealthy, there was still poor children there, you know, still children who weren't coming to school with enough to eat.
Is it a Muslim country?
It is a Muslim country, yeah. Yeah,
so is it with those restrictions in place?
Well, when you say restrictions, for us as expats over there, the restrictions aren't as harsh or as strict as you think they are. Yeah. I didn't have to wear a headscarf or a, you know, an abaya or anything like that, but I was very respectful. I wouldn't have gone into a shopping mall in shorts, you know, or a vest. I could go in a t-shirt and pants, and that would be fine. So you was very respectful, but it was really lovely to see that side of, you know, my outlook of the Muslim religion, and my children's outlook is very, very different than most UK residents, because we had friends who were Muslim, and you know, I would sit with the women and say to them, you know, tell me about it, and they would say, you know, their day consists around when their husband gets in from work, the children would be bathed and ready for bed. And I was like, that's like Victorian times. Like, are you kidding? And she was going, oh no. And then the children would go to bed, and then we'd spend our time together. And I started to think, hold on a minute, is this? And she'd go, no, this is a choice. You know, these are the choices. The headscarves, things like that, would be very much around choice. A lot of the women would wear the abaya and hijab because they wanted to be respectful for the religion. They go to Europe quite often, you know, they would choose not to, but in their home country, they certainly would. Mm. And it really gave a different, you know, I met some really powerful Muslim women, some really just had a spark about them. And there was certainly in the wealthier classes, there was definitely no oppression. It was all by choice. And that's a really lovely, refreshing way to think about it, you know, that it was their choice. I'd worked in the school for quite a long time, seen a lot of affluent.
What was your passion involved in this? Because I mean, to do this kind of level of work, you've got to be pretty committed to doing it, to be involved in that kind of stressful situation. So where was the passion? Where was the passion for you?
For me, it was the kids, definitely the students. They were amazing. You know, we just spoke before we came live on air that I'm going back to Abu Dhabi to do some work this weekend, and a couple of my students that I used to see, I'm going to surprise visit them, and you know, I can't wait to see how they are. They're doing their A levels now, you know, things like that. The children, even though there is a lot of money, and even though the expats get paid a lot of money, there's a lot of affluent neglect there as well, you know, because they would throw money rather than attention. Yes. And so for those students who walked through my door, they knew they had that hour with me, you know, once a week, that I just listened to them and you know, supported them in what they wanted to do and or how they felt. And you know, to know that you're making a difference in, you know, what's going to be the future generation. Mm-hmm. Is beautiful. Yes, I couldn't have done it forever, but it was amazing to do at the time.
So how long were you there for?
So I was actually in Abu Dhabi for nearly 9 years.
Wow.
I did some private work and worked at school. I became quite, we set up our own counselling organisation. A couple of people I knew over there, social workers, counsellors, we set up a whole network there, which was really important because there were few and far between on the ground in Abu Dhabi. And then I came back and started my own company again. And we've just relaunched, the company, Resilient Kid, because about June this year, I was asked to do a TED Talk. And when you're in that situation where you can talk about anything, like, you know, you've got a stage for 10 minutes and they say, you know, a bit like your podcast, what's your passion? What is it that you want to tell the world? And I thought about all the schools that I go into, all the children that I meet, the parents, the teachers, you know, even people on the corporate ladder. And I thought, what is it? You know, what is it that really floats my boat? And so very controversially picked the title, Is Education Broken? And that became, unbeknown to me at the time, became kind of my tagline. That one of the things that I say in there is, yes, I do think as a psychotherapist, I'm a qualified teacher as well, is that I do think this system that we have now in the UK is broken, because it's based on a very archaic model, the factory model, where we all sit at desks, you know, and learn by rote. And I just think it's not for the children of today. So I then, in the TED Talk, started to propose how we could help these children. And, you know, you can use technology, but it's those basics of teaching them resilience, teaching them to bounce back. Because I think what we tend to do now is try and stop them from failing, for a start. And I think we pick them up too quickly. And I think we need to allow them to learn from those lessons, those failures, and then that'll help them, you know, build character and set them up for the next challenge that they have. But if they don't learn about those challenges, then how are they going to be resilient when they get out there in the big wide world and things are thrown at them?
Yes. We tell them what to do for years and years and years, then set them free and say, why don't you know what to do?
Exactly. And the biggest thing, it's really funny, the biggest thing in the school in Abu Dhabi for us was we would have children who'd get really good results and be accepted to Oxford and Cambridge, but couldn't iron a shirt, didn't know how to use a washing machine, couldn't cook anything. And we were like, what? You know, and as teachers and as educators, surely that's a fail. I mean, it's a fail if that's, you know, if it's your child going off. But for me, it was like, we can't send them off because they will fail. Because every day, you know, us as business people still have to eat and wash our clothes and do all that and still run your business or you know, keep your social life up. And actually, if you're sending off students to university or wherever, whatever they happen to be doing in life, and yet they can't look after their own basic needs, then that's a fail for me. And so, you know, for me, resilience, just every person I ever meet, it is about how you bounce back. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Tiger Woods or if you're, you know, a student going to university, it's got to be down to resilience. And that's kind of how I came about doing resilient workshops and that, because it was just
so the TED Talk took off. You did it.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good. Really enjoyed it. It was nerve wracking originally. I think if I'd have known what hard work it was, would I have taken it up? I'm not quite sure. And a few people do drop out because it is quite hard work. But after doing it, after standing up on stage, amazing, absolutely amazing experience. Really glad I did it.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. I have quite mixed views of education in terms of my own experience and watching my son go through education, and we're in Scotland, it's a slightly different system.
Yeah.
But I would have to say, I think most of his education could be described as childcare and text and box ticking.
Very much so.
Which is ridiculous. You know, he is there because that's what he has to be there, but he's not actually learning anything useful unless they can tick a box and say, yes, we've taught him this.
Yeah.
And it's like his exam stuff. It's all about learning to pass the exam, not actually the joy of the actual subject.
One of my two bugbears is teaching to test, which is exactly what you're talking about, Paul, where, you know, the teachers, and it isn't their fault, but the teachers are under such huge pressure to get the results so that the school gets more funding, so they get more students, and it's just a vicious cycle. But actually, I speak to teachers up and down the UK, and they're saying, if you speak to like year three teachers or year five teachers or year seven teachers, what they're saying is, because of the way the SATs is done, they're teaching to try and fill the gaps of knowledge, because those kids have come to them with a big gap because they've just learned what's on the exam. So that's kind of my first bugbear, and I hate, because I think it should be about the joy. I'm not talking Montessori style, I'm talking about, why can't we get a topic that everybody's interested in and then learn the maths in it and learn the geography in it, you know, rather than just trying to do tick boxes.
My son came out of Steiner education because he was in Steiner school from 3 until he was 11, which is a completely different kind of philosophy.
Completely different system.
But it's very much about learning something with all your senses. So the beauty of that, there were still things he remembers because he learned to write about it. He learned to draw about it. They would have sung songs about it. They would have done plays about it. They would have done all sorts of things on this topic or subject. And he remembers them very, very well.
I love Steiner schools. I think they're really, really good. They are, some educators criticize them because of the end results, because maybe they don't pass the exams, but then that to me is
it's not about exams, it's about creating resilient kids.
And exactly,
that's the thing about kids that come out of Steiner school, they know who they are and they know what they want, and people find them, a child that's gone right the way through can be very challenging because they will challenge an adult, no, I know what I want, what do you want? It's quite shocking.
But I think it's brilliant, because I mean, just to go back a second, I think comparing a Steiner school to passing your exams is like comparing a fish and a banana. You just can't do it. But for me, I really like it. But I think what happens is, as adults, we get programmed in, well, how many exams have you got? And it's not about that. You know, Richard Branson doesn't give a monkey. You know, nobody cares how many exams Richard Branson's got. He knew what he wanted. He goes for it. You know, all the big entrepreneurs is because they didn't fit into a box. You know, they didn't fit into that. And they have been resilient in the way that they, you know, will continually try. And if it doesn't work, they try it a different way. My other bugbear about the present education system at the moment is, apart from teaching to test, is, my mind's gone blank now. I've said that because I was thinking about the Steiner schools. is also because I think, for me, knowledge is now disposable. Like if I said to you, Paul, the Battle of Hastings, can you tell me what year it is? You'd be able to answer that fast. I can do that with my mobile phone. Yeah. In probably, maybe not as fast, but fairly fast nowadays. And I just think we're not using technology in the right way. And I think what we're doing is we're sitting down and telling the children and making them learn by rote, you know. So it's fantastic that you and I can, you know, we cannot be all smug at a pub quiz and say 1066. But in honesty, I think, why not let the children discover stuff instead of, oh, you've got to learn this list or you've got to learn these. Now, I'm not talking about reading and writing and even your times tables. I think to a certain extent, that's always going to be come in handy. But I think there's lots of things where the children can discover education and discover their passion without being bored to death, because that's what's happening now.
Yes, you know, I would say in essence that he's bored. They are bored, absolutely. And I would thoroughly agree with that. They're bored. And it's a real challenge to know how to move forward on that, really.
Yeah. For me, I think there's lots of different ways that we can move forward. And I think we need to stop hanging our hats on the exams.
Yes.
Because I think, you know, at the end of the day, I know from doing careers interviews with kids, speaking to entrepreneurs, speaking to, like, in the corporate world, to business people, what are you looking for? Are you looking for 10 GCSEs? Are you looking for this? And actually, the answer is, I don't yes, it's great because I know where the level of education is, but actually I'm looking for that spark of something in them.
Actually, what they want is passionate people who can engage their passion in what they do.
That's exactly. Because nothing sells your company more than the passionate frontline person, do you know? And I think we've carried on with this education system because it would be huge to overhaul it and people are scared of doing that. For me, I think we should, you know, teach resilience. We should teach failure. I've got a funny story. So when I was in Abu Dhabi, my daughter went to a lovely school over there, really good, British school. And they did in year, so she would have been five, and they'd done Enterprise Week, and their head was very forward thinking. She was absolutely brilliant. And she was talking about, right, we need to teach these children the value of money, particularly in a very wealthy country. Mm. And so what we did is they made little pin cushions, bookmarks, loads of different things. And then they held a little market, you know, so all the parents put money in to buy these products, the kids make them, and then we go back and buy them back, obviously, because that's how schools work, don't they? So we go into this little marketplace and we take it in turns to be with your child on their market stall and help them as adults come in to buy. And this lady approached as my daughter Erin was stood there, and she said, oh, shall we buy one of these pin cushions for your auntie, to her daughter? And she said, oh yeah. And without missing a heartbeat, my daughter at 5 years old turned around and said, they're 50 dirhams, or I'll give you 2 for 80. And at that point, my head whipped round. Now, I'm fairly good at sales, and I whip round and go, oh my goodness, Erin, that's so cool. Like, where did you learn that? And she said, oh, it's called upselling, mommy. And I was like, you know, this is a girl that's going to be reckoned with. She's five. I mean, that young girl now is 12 and in high school over here. And last year when we went to year seven to the open evening, and I said to the business teacher, so can you tell me what do you offer business wise, you know, what kind of business skills or entrepreneurial skills or what they're going to learn, you know, really keen. I'm an entrepreneur. I can see that she's got a head for figures and for selling. And she said, oh, we do business studies. I said, oh, that's amazing. Brilliant. And she went, oh, she can't do that till year nine. Okay. So what do you do for these guys? Like, you know, in year seven, what do you do? And I said, do you do like a entrepreneur week? Do you do like, you know, business week? Do you do math? And she said, oh, not till year nine. And I'm a bit like, seriously? Like, what about these kids? And I mean, she's a bright girl, you know, but what about the kids who that is going to be their way, but they've got to wait until year nine? And is it you're going to teach them entrepreneurial skills, or are you going to teach them the, you know, the boring aspects of business? And I just think they're missing a trick. They're absolutely missing a trick, because
the kids have got it. They can see it on YouTube. They can see all this stuff. They learn more on YouTube than anywhere else. So your new business that you're putting together, this resilient children, is it resilient children?
No, resilient kids.
Resilient kids, sorry.
Yes. Okay. No, it's purposely kids, Paul, because A, I'm from the north.
Yeah.
If you can't tell by my accent. And it's kind of evolved. And actually, I was going to pick resilient children. And then I started to think, actually, no, you know what? I was a resilient kid. And I wasn't a child, and particularly in the north, and particularly the Manchester area, you would say like our kid, or
with,
you know,
but with my head on, my marketing head on, a resilient kid sounds a lot more rough and tumble than a resilient child or a resilient
exactly
children.
And that's exactly what it's going to be, you know. It is about that rough and tumble and then bouncing back. And it's
so is this a program? What is Resilient Kids? What does it provide?
So I provide talks on resilience. So that is to teachers, to parents, to teens. It really, you know, depends on what the client's asking for.
Yeah.
We also do, so I do talks, but I also do workshops as well, which are very practical. And then also we're just looking at doing resilient CEO, resilient teen, because we have a resilient teen workshop, but we're also looking at teaching the parents about the teens. So I have quite a neuroscience background as well. Okay. And I think parents and teachers don't understand what's happening with a teen's brain at mm-hmm. that time. And sometimes I think we put too much pressure. I'm not saying that teens are all grumpy and things like that, but if you knew what went on in their brain at that time, you would probably give them a little bit of a leeway. Obviously not breaking rules, breaking boundaries, right. But you would have a bit more of an understanding of what's going on for them.
Their brain gets scrambled, doesn't it, at one stage? It's absolutely, it's like chocolate pudding in there for a while.
Oh, it completely is. I mean, there's no secret. Like, if you look at the terrible twos, you know, for yes. two-year-olds, and then teenagers, and then we talk about 21 as being, you know, key of the door, all that kind of thing. It is because at that point in their lives, that is when the neural networks are really firing the most. And you look at the symptoms you get with puberty for a teenager, and look on the DSM for depression, and most of them match up. And so it's any wonder that kids and teens are like going out there and being, you know, one minute they're very manic and they're, hi, how are you? And the next minute they're like, I don't want to speak to you anymore, you know, and they're in a mood. But it is because they've got all this energy going on and all this activity in the brain. You know, bless them. I just think sometimes we need to just give them a little bit of a break.
We do indeed. So what's your success model for you? Because obviously we've looked at your passion, and clearly you're passionate about bringing this stuff to the world. What would be a success for you, and how do you measure success?
I think for me, it always comes down to how many children I can reach. For sure. And that's why a lot of the work I do is not actually individual children. Mm-hmm. Although I do that, but it's not as often anymore, because I feel if I speak to a teacher, or if I do 30 teachers in a conference, you know, and do a big talk like that, then behind every teacher is another 30 children.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm not just reaching one at a time for that hour like I used to do in the school, but I'm reaching, you know, 30 times 30. And so for me, success is if I can pass on those tools to those who are educators or parents, then yeah, that's a success for me, for sure.
And as a business owner, what does success mean to you?
I think sometimes it's easy to think as a, you know, as an entrepreneur and, you know, in the kind of worlds that we mix in, I think sometimes it comes down to money. And I'm not sure it always is. I think for me, business success is knowing your own worth. So it isn't just a case of, I've just earned however many, you know, hundreds or thousands for that job. But did I get satisfaction? Did it bring me joy? And actually, what's my worth in all of that? And I think definitely the joy. I kind of only take on stuff that's going to bring me joy now, you know. Often I'll get approached by somebody and it's a head, like we started earlier in the conversation, ticking a box. You know, they want a well-being talk. Actually, you'll do it. But I have that conversation with them and I say, what is it that you actually want? Because if you're just ticking a box for the new Ofsted framework, then fab. Yep, I get that. But actually, what do you want the outcome to be for your staff or your students? And if it is, they say, well, we really do want them to have more resilience. We want them to have the tools to give them and build that resilience, then I'm there. If it is, oh, it's because we've got to do this for Ofsted, it's not really for me. You know, it's got to bring me joy as well. Because I think that comes across as a speaker, that comes across. You know.
But that's the thing that's missing in modern life, isn't it? We've got so caught up in the idea of, you know, in from a country perspective, in profit and GDP and this, and we've forgotten that happiness is the important thing in the day. You know, if everybody's got their heads down and working hard, but bloody miserable, the whole thing. How's that successful?
Exactly, and I think for me, and I say this a lot to, you know, friends who are in business for themselves. And when I started The Resilient Kid, I was very much the same. I feel that if you go where the joy is, the money will come.
Yes, that's true.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
So I'm at that point in the conversation where I asked you this question. And the question is, what is the one question I haven't asked you? What was the question you would want? What is it that I should ask you about?
Is the one question. Oh, I like that. I like that part. The one question that you should ask me. Maybe what is resilience?
Sounds like a good one. What is resilience?
What is resilience? So for me, resilience is that bounce back ability. So whether you've had a death in the family, whether you have had, you know, heartbreak from a relationship, a career change, or, you know, or your parents have just split up. It's that bounce back ability, but learning from that. And I think for me, how do you build that resilience? It's learning from any mistakes that you've made, but learning from the challenges. And that comes down to self-belief. It comes down to having social connection, which I think particularly for people nowadays, because we have got this, you know, massive and fantastic social media platform, quite often we don't have the social connections we think we have. We might have 600 friends on Facebook.
It's artificial, isn't it?
Exactly. Or 1,000 followers on Insta. But actually, it comes down to having that one or a handful of people that you can say, yes, I can talk to. So if something happens to you today, you know there's somebody at the end of a phone or a message to say, this is the kind of day I'm having.
Yeah.
You know, can you help? And for me, that social connection is huge. It helps from an educational point of view. Social connection helps with motivation and concentration, you know, in the research. But it really does help with resilience, because how do you know that you can get over this if A, you've got nobody to talk to, but B, if you've got nobody to compare in the real world? Comparing yourself on social media is always going to be a fail. But if you can say, you know, if somebody says to you, listen, I went through that, or listen, you know, such and such a body went through that, and look at them now, you know, a real life example, but somebody who you can, you know, knock on the door, give them a call, drop them a text.
Yeah.
That, for me, social connection is definitely the way to build, you know, bigger and better resilience.
Mm-hmm. Someone you can get a hug from.
Yeah. Oh, don't even start me on hugs. Love, I'm a big hugger, Paul. Just for your brain, it does so much for your brain and for your body. And I often get a lot of parents who will say to me that they've got, you know, you're talking kind of from the ages of 7 to 16, and particularly boys, just is that way, but particularly boys, but they'll say, how can I reach them? How can I reach particularly teenagers? Because how do I reach them? They're not kissing, they're not hugging anymore, blah, blah, blah. And I say, do you know what? Physical contact will do more in that 30 seconds than any conversation can do, because it just really helps. It helps with bonding, helps with the hormones, it helps with your neural networks, and it helps with your whole nervous system to calm them down. And I make a point of, whenever I'm talking to somebody, is to touch them, not in a weird way, but, you know, whether it's the hand, whether it's the shoulder, you know, if my son comes in from school, luckily he's still at an age where he will hug me. But if we're in front of friends, he might not, you know, but I'll make sure I always touch his shoulder and just give it a little squeeze. He knows I'm there no matter what's going on.
Yeah,
and that, you know, physical contact cannot be underestimated. It's huge.
Indeed. That's absolutely brilliant. So Ashley, we are coming to that point in the conversation where I need to ask you about, how would people get in touch with you? How would they find out more about Resilient Kids?
Okay, so I'm on Facebook, Insta, YouTube, and Twitter.
All those links will be on the podcast notes, okay? Yeah.
So all the usual ways, and they can just DM me on there. The website is just being built by another mutual friend of ours, Ed, the lovely Ed. So that's just being built at the moment. So you get in touch anytime.
Fantastic. So my final question to all of my guests, and this was the reason I actually started this podcast, because when my father died, I recognized, which is 2 or 3 years ago now, I recognized that he had lost the will to live over many, many years. And part of that reason he lost the will to live, because he had no purpose or meaning in life. He couldn't see a point of it all. And it made me question my own reality of this and, you know, what is it all for? So I asked, that's why I started this podcast, so I could ask people this question. For you, Ashley, what is the meaning of life? Why are we here?
Oh, I love it. I'm liking that. I would say, for me, it is definitely to make a difference in children's lives. And I don't say that, you know, lightly. I don't say it with a, we're all here to make a difference. But I think I have done various different jobs, always with, you know, some kind of nurturing psychology background. But all the jobs that I've ever done, I've always come back to the kids, always. And for me, I think if I can help, whether it's my own, I've got two of my own, whether it's my own, whether it's nieces and nephews, or whether it's children out there in the big wide world, then for me, that gives me joy. And that's the meaning of life. Having that joy, having that connection with somebody. And I just happen to specialize in trying to help children do that as well.
Fantastic. That's a good answer. I mean, it is, you know, everybody has their own take on it. And I find, and I think if you, we have to answer these questions. I mean, the reason this podcast exists for me, because everybody had answers to those three questions. What am I passionate about? What's success for me? And what is the meaning of life for me? If we all had answers to those questions, we would be more resilient and we would actually have a better life. But most people spend their time not thinking about these things and just get on with the next day, the next day, the next day.
And I think we always call that in our family drifting. You know, it's very easy to get into the routines and the mundane everyday life where you go to, you get up, you go to work, the kids go to school, whatever. And I think that's very, very easy to drift. And I think you're very right. I think it is the big times in our life, like, you know, your dad dying, my mum died earlier in the year. And I think what happens is it makes you take stock. Mm. And for me, it's about when you stop and take stock, then you need to take action, because it's very difficult to go back to just drifting and getting back into that routine once you realize that it's not, you know, your life as you know it is maybe not all you want. And so, yeah, I think it's a lovely, I love, as soon as you mentioned the podcast, I was like, I'm in for that. So I just loved the idea of it. So, yeah.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much for spending the time with me today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm sure at some stage down the line, we will talk again.
Fantastic. I really appreciate it, Paul. Thank you for a lovely conversation today.
All the best.
Thank you.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with me, Paul Harvey, and my guest, Ashley Costello. If you would like to get in touch with Ashley, you can find her on LinkedIn and on Facebook. The links are on the podcast page in the usual place at the bottom of the page underneath the podcast itself. So thank you for your time and attention. As you may have noticed, Life, Passion and Business has been taking a break while we consider the future of this podcast. There are some more shows in the bank and they will go live shortly over the next few weeks. I'll be back with a regular offering as soon as we work out what that looks like. In the meantime, please continue to support the show with your comments and reviews, because they're always appreciated. So thanks again for listening, and I will catch you next time.